All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to SaberSims DFS Office Hours. It is Tuesday, May 31st of 2022. I hope you all had a wonderful Memorial Day weekend here. It is our first stream of the week, but it is indeed Tuesday here today. Almost messed that up as I was getting ready for the stream here today. I was mentally prepared to say Monday because it is feeling a bit like a Monday on the stream here today. If you are new to Office Hours, my name's Jordan. I'm the head coach here at SaberSim, and DFS Office Hours is an open Q&A style show where I answer questions from the SaberSim community about how to better use SaberSim, about how to build better DFS lineups, whatever you guys want to talk about. If you have questions you want to ask me on this show, you can email us support@sabersim.com. You can type your questions in live in YouTube chat if you're here with me live. And you can ask your questions in the Office Hours channel in our Slack community. There is a link to join Slack in the description of every past show. We have one question in our queue here for today. It is from Andrew. It's about backtesting. And we'll answer it here in just a moment. We'll talk a little bit about backtesting. But if you have questions for me, I know it's pretty early. I know people are slowly joining in here. So welcome, everybody. If you guys have questions for me, fire away. We'll talk a little bit about this one question here, but it is the only one in the queue here today. I'm happy to answer questions as long as we got them. But I'm going to need you guys to build that queue out a little bit for me so we can keep the show going today. Metal Alloy said, nice background. Thank you. The background is up today because the house is a mess. I'm moving on Saturday. There are crates, boxes, other belongings strewn about directly behind this black background. You guys don't need to see all that. So it is the black background today. I think it looks nice. I think it looks good up there as well. So maybe we'll feature that a little bit more. But excited overall for the move. Should have a much more, I don't know what the right word is, maybe a themed background post-move. A proper office. I know the living room background has served me well here. With my dog on the couch, sometimes providing a cameo as well, but it's time for an upgrade. So looking forward to that. That should be premiering that on Monday of next week. So if everything goes to plan this weekend. But let's go ahead and get into it here and pull the app up and answer the question that we have in our queue here. And again, this is from Andrew. And he said, what really is backtesting and how do people do it? This is a good question. I will preface this by saying, you know, I think proper backtesting is something that's going to be, you know, really something that would be done more by computer programmers or the guys on the models team, things like that. I will speak to kind of what backtesting is and some of the ways that SaberSim does it. But like as a DFS player, I have never really implemented any of my own like rigorous or like analytical backtesting of my process. And a main reason why is because it's kind of hard to do it. But let's talk about this a little bit. So backtesting, really what that means is it is testing a process. It is using a given process in past historical data points, data samples, right? So if you were backtesting a DFS process, right, you might recreate the steps you would take to build DFS lineups and then run that in every slate that was played in baseball, for example, for the past 2 years. And if you had a profitable ROI after that, right, maybe that's not perfectly statistically significant sample to say, yes, I feel like that's a profitable process or an improving process or an improvement upon my current process, but you would at least have some kind of data set to work from. You would have some kind of reason to believe that you'd be more profitable using that particular process, right? It's essentially, you know, the way I kind of often think about it is it's a clear improvement compared to a more intuitive or heuristic approach to making a decision or changing something in your process, right? Like you might say, I'm going to start playing larger stacks. I'm going to play only larger stacks every single time I play baseball because I know correlation exists in baseball, right? And that's kind of an intuitive, there's a heuristic at play there. You know, you have some data to back that up that stacks are useful. Maybe you see some sharper players doing that. You can just do that, right? Well, the one step further of taking that analysis to the next level and saying, no, I feel more confident now that this is actually going to be more profitable, would be backtesting it and building lineups in that new process for past slates that actually ran, and seeing what kind of lineups they built and how you performed, right? And more you could do that, right? The more data points you could put in that sample, the more weight you could put behind that particular decision. I think it's particularly useful in, sports, particularly sports modeling, because the actual games that got played are really all we had, all we have, right? And there's only one actual slate that gets played a day, right? We have one baseball main slate every day. You know, sometimes we get that early or whatever. We get a couple extra slates, but essentially one a day. So it's difficult. It's difficult to have enough runway or enough sample size to make decisions and know if it's actually helping you in any other way than going into the past, into the past data that we have and seeing if something would have worked, two seasons ago, three seasons ago, last season, et cetera. So that's what it is. In terms of how do people do it, I'll give an example of, one of the things that I commonly refer to as backtested on this show here, and that is the sliders. So when I reference the sliders being backtested, I literally mean we basically take every single combination of sliders, right, that you can make and build lineups for those particular sets of sliders. And we do this multiple times. And then we will, for a GPP 20 max 10 to 50K, we will basically plug those lineups that we got out of those particular builds and slot them into the contest that actually existed and see which sliders performed the best, right? Which sliders created lineups that performed the best in past contests that actually ran? And that is essentially part of our slider backtesting process. There's probably a pretty big world of DFS backtesting that you can dive into. I would say most of the time what people are doing is probably some kind of level of simulation of saying, let's take this process, let's build lineups, and let's compare a... actually, I could be wrong there. And this is maybe where some of my inexperience about this is showing. But building lineups for a particular slate with a control and a changed variable, right? Something that is different and seeing which ones performed better over a year or a two-year or a three-year sample size of past slates. And that's essentially what people are doing. So I've stretched that out about as long as I can here. Again, it's something that I'm familiar with as a concept, but I can't speak on backtesting as an actual expert here because it's not something that I've personally done very much of. But I have another question in my queue here. I've managed to make it to our second question of today's show. So we'll go ahead and end that one there and move on to this next question from Metal Alloy and said, what's the reason for not showing the projected ownership projections for each player on the step one build page? I'm a little confused here. What is the reason for not showing projected ownership projections for each player on the step one build page? We do. They're right there. My ownership is projected ownership. If you are missing it, it's possible that your these columns and tables are totally editable. So it's possible that at some point became unselected. So it's not showing up anymore. Very easy way to just get everything back to normal is to just reset this to default. Just click reset to default and you should be able to see that again. But unless I'm confused by something here, you really actually should be able to add this column in even if you're not seeing it any step in the process, right? So, even if you're creating a player group, for example, it's already there in the player groups as well, but the my ownership should be visible in every step of the SaberSim process. If it is not, virtually every table in the app is editable. And I would just double check and make sure that you've got that column selected. So unless I am missing something here, let me know. It's possible I'm missing something. So, okay, we have a question from an Eric via Ruben. And let's hit this one. He said, I took down my first single entry for 2K last night, so thanks for that. Congratulations. That's awesome. I have a question about a FanDuel 150 entry large tourney stacks. I'm getting over 90% of one team on this 12-game slate. Is that too much, or should I trust the results? Interesting question. 12-game slate and 90% exposure to one team. I would one thing. So we'll do a test here, and we'll see. Let's take a look at this. I would double check and make sure that you are selecting, you know, the right sliders for your particular contest. 90% of one team in 150 lineups for a 12-game slate here does seem like a lot to me. I would say if you're using the 150 max sliders, you're going to have a pretty high sim precision value. And I think it's likely you will probably be pretty diversified, but it can vary. It's not every slate's a little bit different. So let's actually run a build and see what we get out of this. But that sim precision slider is going to be the biggest determining factor of how much exposure you're getting to your highest exposed teams and stacks and pitchers and things like that when you go to build your lineups. So I would double check and make sure that slider is set to the default that's appropriate for the contest that you're playing. Here's Eric. He said it literally just jumped to 50%+. I guess it was too early. The sliders were on point. Yeah, that's also possible that, you know, early projections, very early in the day projections are a little wonky, right? We may be very higher or lower on certain players or whatever. So it's possible that that'll get dialed in. I still think this is an interesting question here. So let's finish this build. So yeah, I mean, you can see here we're getting a little bit more moderate exposure to different players, 45% to our highest exposed bat here. Let's talk a little bit about this in general. So a few things that I think kind of come into play here. One thing on slates, you'll often see that, SaberSim will kind of diversify you in different places based on what the slate looks like. This isn't a great pitching slate, I would say. There are not a lot of like particularly elite aces or even value plays. I think ownership is likely to be pretty spread out at pitching. When that happens, when there's kind of already a lot of natural diversity at pitching, I think you can see a little bit more of a concentration on bats. The builder will basically find its diversity via pitching and will be willing to maybe be a little bit more exposed to bats. Vice versa, if there are elite pitching plays, right? Maybe it's a pitching slate where, you know, especially on FanDuel, maybe there's only like three different pitchers that are really viable. You may see extremely spread out batting exposures. Eric said under teams I was getting 90% plus Seattle. It's probably likely, given that it was early in the day in this particular situation, that you happen to build lineups on a sim that maybe just overweighted Seattle, right? That has since kind of been rectified. I would still say though, you know, when you're thinking about your exposures in particular, I would ask yourself more from the standpoint of what is the associated risk with rostering players at these exposures, and am I comfortable with that level of risk for me, right? Because that question, well, what the sim precision slider and what its default value is going to do is it's going to give you kind of within the context of the current slate an average appropriate amount of exposure to your different players in your lineup portfolio. The builder's kind of saying, you know, this makes sense on average, but different players are going to play, or different players are going to have different levels of risk tolerance and risk preferences in their lineup portfolio. For me, this would probably be a little bit too highly exposed to some of these Seattle bats, right? I'm not saying it 100% of the time I would make an adjustment here, but I would probably feel a little bit more comfortable if my highest exposed bats in a 150 max were closer to about that 30% mark. And that's kind of a general preference that I have. I like to play a little bit more diversified, especially in a sport where individual player outcomes are the ranges of outcomes are so wide. I often like to diversify a little bit more, even beyond what that default value will give me there. And that's just a personal risk tolerance standpoint, right? I'm basically saying, you know, there are probably enough lineups with a similar expected value in the pool that I would rather diversify a little bit more, potentially sacrifice a few maybe small points of EV by playing a little bit maybe of a more diversified pool to spread out my risk and to have a little bit more wider equity in the contest. For some people, this might be too diversified, right? I think for 150 lineups, that might be unlikely, but maybe you play in a particularly high upside volatile strategy where maybe you want to take a stand on a guy like Montas and then also get a lot of exposure to Houston, right? For example, right? Maybe that's an approach that you take. And to allow that strategy to really pay off, right? You want to be very concentrated onto, Houston bats, for example, right? In this case, I don't have lineups to fit that particular direction, but you can kind of get what I'm saying. So a lot of times the exposure you have to certain stacks or players or whatever in your pool is mostly going to come down more to personal risk tolerance and risk aversion rather than a strategic adjustment to particular teams or stacks or whatever. Let's see. A couple other questions here. Eric said, so reducing the Seattle bats is better than reducing the Seattle team exposure under teams, correct? No, by no means is one better than the other. It really depends on just kind of what your intention is. I have just over time gotten in the habit of doing most of my adjustments on individual player levels. I just do. I guess it's kind of a force of habit. If you would prefer to come in here and say, you know what, no more than 40% Seattle, that's perfectly fine. I think the reason you can see, I mean, it still has an adjustment, right? It brings down those Seattle bats. I think the reason I have gotten used to batters in general is just, at the end of the day, a stack is a way of describing a lineup, right? But you play individual players, right? And I mean, SaberSim does a very good job of making you diversified. You won't have 40% Seattle stacks, but 80% JP Crawford. Even if that was even possible, right? Like that's not likely to happen. But in my mind, I prefer to edit the individual player batter exposures just because individual players are what actually goes into a lineup. You don't actually build a lineup that is Seattle, right? You play some combination of four batters. So I think that's maybe, I guess a better way of putting that is I like the one extra level of granularity that you get of specificity. Is that a word? With the batters, but perfectly fine to edit it on the stacks as well. Whatever makes some intuitive sense for you there. So Aaron said, I don't mind going all in on one stack. I view the 25 cent arcade as the same as a $5 single entry. Yeah. And I think that's a good point too, that it depends a lot as well on what contest you're building lineups for and what that represents in terms of your bankroll allocation for the slate, right? If you are maxing, the quarter arcade and it's you want to take a particular strong stance in that contest for $5, I think that means a lot different than if you are playing even the $4.20 max, right? There's a big bankroll difference there. The way that you might want to play mini max, if you were playing the mini max for $150 to max that out, might be very different in terms of how willing you are to be exposed to certain players than if you were playing the flagship, right? Which is a little over $2,000 to max out. So I actually think you can use the exposures as combined with the bankroll that you've invested on that particular slate as a way of thinking about that, right? Like think about this financially instead, right? So if you've invested, if you're playing, if you have 25% exposure to a player in the $4.20 max, right? You've invested $80 to play that contest. You're investing $20 in that particular player's performance on that slate. I think taking that financial approach can sometimes be a useful way. If you don't immediately have an intuitive sense of how much exposure you want to a particular player, right? Consider it from that financial standpoint as well. I think that can be a helpful way of thinking about that a little bit more. So. Okay, let's jump back. So I think I did miss something here. So Metal Alloy had said, sorry if my question wasn't clear. After I generate lineups, I see an own column, which I presume is how much of the field owns that player versus the exposure column, which I thought was my ownership. I'm asking why the own column isn't displayed in the first step, or does that depend on the sim based on each specific slate setting that was simulated? Okay, so I think I understand now, and I think I can kind of see why some of this isn't clear. So the own column in the build screen, this value is whatever is in the my own column here in step in the projection screen, right? So it is basically exactly that value. It is editable before the build and not after the build, mostly just because we can use custom, we're set up to accept custom ownership projections prior to the build being run. After the build has run, we're basically just not set up to adjust ownership projections after a build has run in the same way we can adjust projections, right? So like ownership is an ownership projection. What percentage of lineups in a large field GPP do we expect to have that player in them? Exposure is your current percentage of lineups in your set that have that particular player in them. So I can see why this is confusing. It is mostly a semantical thing. So the own column is represented on the projections tab. It is just called my own. And it's an editable column in the projections tab because of just a technical kind of on the how we're set up on the technical level. So like this number is on the projections tab as the my own column. So Eric said, any updates on the min and max adjustments for MLB teams pre-build? I may have teams I want to five stack and they will not have any stacks of that particular team in the pool. Yeah, so we talked about this a little bit this morning. It is something that we still want to implement. There's a few other moving pieces to this on our end of other things that we want to include in this release. So I would say it's probably not something that we would just expect to just have done very quickly. It's likely to come with some other changes to the way that we handle rules and groups and stacks in general. I would say that in the meantime, the stacking rule itself may be of help to you under the rules tab, under stacking. You know, you can come in here. It does not give you completely robust control over exposures before the build. But what you can do is come in here and say at least five players from the same team. I think one helpful way to use this is to remove all of the stacks to start, and then only add in the teams that you want. So let's say we have, you know, let's do a quick go through. So let's say we want to play Seattle, the Twins, Red Sox. Let's just add a few. Red Sox. Okay. Actually, I guess it doesn't even really matter exactly who we use here. We'll do, let's say, just these four teams, right? Colorado, Yankees, Red Sox, Brewers. So we need a five stack from each of these teams in every single lineup. Now we can come over here and actually build these lineups. And we will have a five stack of one of those four teams in every single lineup. Now that doesn't necessarily mean you will get even exposures right off the bat, right? If you want maybe 25% exposure to each team, but you will build a pool of lineups that every lineup must have one of those teams in it. And it should be a little bit easier to adjust your exposures in the post-build process to fine tune and get everything dialed in. So long term, it is still our goal to give people the ability to say, you know, I want five stacks of these teams and I know what exposures I want beforehand. I know exactly how I want 10% of this team and 15 here and 30% here. For now, setting a stack rule, limiting it to only apply to certain teams and then adjusting exposures in the post build process should work okay. So who's the team we're missing? New York? So now, like, let's say we wanted to make sure that we got some Yankee stacks. We should be able to go in here and say 20% Yankees and get to some Yankee stacks. If, for whatever reason, you aren't getting enough exposure to these teams, right? Maybe you didn't get any Yankee stacks. And the builder said, oh, okay, Colorado, Boston, and Milwaukee will give you 100% of those three teams. At that point, one thing I would do, I would go and bump up the team totals to those particular teams, right? That it can be something, you know, maybe you told the builder, hey, I want stacks of all of the teams projected for over five runs and also Houston. Well, you're probably not going to get very many Houston stacks out of the gate, right? Maybe at that point, good idea to bump up the exposure here or bump up the team total. So yeah, HC said, I tried that Saturday and for some reason it gave me the Brewers and they weren't one of the teams okay. So honestly, I think, you know, Eric said he had the same issue. That sounds like a bug to me. So I would say the next time that happens, if you can use the settings dropdown in the upper right and click report a problem, give us kind of a brief description of what you tried to do and submit a bug report. Obviously, the stacking rule should be working. So if you are setting a stacking rule, now, I guess the one thing I want to make clear here is So this is, so let me think. I think FanDuel is an easier way to explain this. So on FanDuel, because you can run, well, because you can only run four stacks maximum. So this kind of rule is like, this is an inclusive rule. It is not a prohibitive rule. So basically what I mean there is, if you said, let's just say, for example, that you picked, you know, Colorado, Toronto, and Washington, four stacks in every single lineup, right? You will get a four stack in of Colorado, Toronto, and Washington, or you should in every single lineup. You could also get a Colorado four stack with a four stack of the Cubs on the other side, right? Because you're not, this kind of rule does not prohibit a four stack of the Cubs showing up. It only makes sure that there is at least a four stack of these three teams. So I think keeping that in mind is important there, right? But so if you are, I guess I should be clear, if you are getting a stack of a team, if you are actually, the better way of saying this is, if you are getting lineups that do not include a stacking of a team in them, that would be a very good time to reach out to support, right? Like if you built a lineup using this rule and there was no Washington, no Toronto, and no Colorado four stack in it, that's a bug. And that may very well be happening. We would want to chase that down and figure that out. And that bug report would help us do that. I think Eric has maybe kind of a different issue here. My pool is usually 500 and I may still not get a five stack of the team that I want. And that can happen as well, right? That in that particular case, it's likely that there is of your different pool of stacks, right? Of the different teams you've chosen to stack, one of them is probably just a lower projected play that the builder doesn't really want to use, right? And that's kind of the example I was giving before, where, you know, maybe you're stacking the Braves and the Dodgers and the Marlins and the Rockies and all of these 5-0 projected, these five run total projected teams and Houston, right? So in that case, you're just not going to get a lot of Houston stacks just because the team is a lot lower projected. So if that's the case, there's a couple things I would say, you know, bump up that team total projection. You want to stack them anyway, right? Bump up that team total projection so that it is comparable to some of the other teams that you want to stack, at least close. Build yourself a larger pool, right? That will always help. You'll get more diversity, more natural diversity in your lineup pool by having a larger pool size. And one other thing you can do is also increase that sim precision slider, which will diversify your lineups a little bit more. From there, you should be able to get get exposure to each team that you want to stack if you've taken those steps. So, you know, another thing you can do is, there's a lot of times with these questions, there's always a lot of different ways to solve these problems. Another thing you could do, you know, using the Houston example again, is you build your stacking rule. So, you know, you're going in here, you've done all your different stacks. And in the interest of getting enough Houston stacks, right, you could come in here and say, you know, give me, I want 20% of each of these guys. Right. And so you're not doing it on a stack level, but you're saying, I want 20% of, you know, at least maybe the top guys. So that combined with a stacking rule should help get you there. So I know some of this stuff ultimately is kind of still a bit of a workaround, a bit of alternative solutions for these things. Eventually, it is our goal to just add min and max exposures for team stacks themselves before the build. But that's what I would recommend doing in the meantime. Some combination of that, right? Bumping up team totals, setting those stacking rules, setting minimum batter exposures, et cetera. So, cool. Any other questions for me here? What else do we have going on? Fun 13/12 game slate, depending on what site you're playing on here tonight. It looked like a 12 gamer on FanDuel. I'm not sure what game is missing. There's probably some doubleheader in here, right? Keep an eye on the weather in Coors. I don't think that game's going to play, to be totally honest. Rain is supposed to start here in a few hours, and as far as I'm aware, it's going to rain all night. I don't know how they get this game in. It's been a wet May here. Especially the last couple weeks in the Denver area. I'm pretty sure we are supposed to get pouring rain starting at like 4 o'clock our time. So 6:40, not looking good. But Metal Alloy said, is there a way to play exactly three players from a chalky team, example Dodgers, but also want to build at least five-man stacks of three other low-owned teams with team stack rules and groups? Yeah, so, I mean, I would start that with, I would probably start with your five-stack rule. So you said, you know, at least five players from the same team. So you said Milwaukee, who might be a little chalkier than you think. But let's see. Oops, that's not Milwaukee. Oh, God. I know it is a little bit painful to sort through these here. So maybe some improvements we can make there. I'm probably... There it is. First one. Milwaukee, the Mets, and the Braves. Is that what you said? Or LA. Angels. And let's get the Mets. Mets. So there we go. So you'd start with that. If you want, so if you want exactly three, you could do the same thing here, right? At least three players from the same team. And even start over here. And, you know, maybe you want a Dodger stack in every single lineup, right? Now every lineup is going to be a five stack of these teams you've identified and always a Dodgers three stack on the run back. I'm going to assume that maybe you have other teams in there that you want to be exposed to. So we'll just say what this rule will do is give you a five stack of these three teams and always a three stack on the other side. And then we can come in here and build these lineups and fine tune and make adjustments to your exposures in the post build screen. So my phone is going ballistic here. I apologize if that's getting picked up on the mic. Seems like we got stuck here on this build. So let's give this another try. So again, I think, you know, with a lot of these things, general advice is set a stacking rule that gets you close, that does approximately what you kind of feel like it should do, or getting you, sorry, set a stacking rule that gets you most of the way there, and then dial in the build screen and build yourself a bigger pool of lineups. Maybe consider increasing that sim precision slider if you're finding that you still can't get there. So, but in this case, five stacks, your three teams, right? You can adjust exposure to balance these out a little bit more. If you have a particular set of exposures that you want for these, other associated three stacks, right? Maybe you want, you know, I don't know, 40% Dodgers exposure here. You should be able to get there. So some combination again of setting the stacking rule and making adjustments in the build screen should get you there. So, Michael said, any way you could add a tab to access different sets of projections instead of uploading projections each time you want to use a different set of projections. Something to that effect is on the way. So that is something we're working on. Different sets of projections, as well as possibly some in-app aggregation of different projections as well. That is in progress. So yeah, something we do want to add. Oh yeah, and then you mentioned aggregates. Yep. So that is... work in progress. Brad said, Jordan, I had a situation over the weekend where I wanted to get some exposure on Brave stacks. I reported the issue as they weren't showing at all when I went to team exposures. Ross said they weren't showing at all because I had zero stacks in my initial 500. So I went back and changed projections in the Braves, but could never get them in that build. What was I doing wrong? When I created a new build, I could get them, but I didn't want to lose what I had already done. So I just ran without Braves and they had a good day, unfortunately. Yeah, they always will. If you ever have that, trying to get Braves or whatever team in your lineup and something's not working. They inevitably 100% always will. I can't speak to exactly what might've been going wrong here. What typically, because of how highly variant baseball is, if you are running a build, especially with a large pool and a, higher sim precision, moderate to high sim precision slider, and you are getting 0% exposure to a team in your lineup pool, it typically means there's probably some setting that is prohibiting it somewhere. I would check, again, I can't speak specifically to exactly what might have been going on here, but I would check that you don't have a stacking rule that is in some way prohibiting that team from showing up. I would also, you know, consider a few other things. One, dropping your minimum projection filter down to zero and lowering your min salary. I know there was an issue, well, not even an issue. There was a similar question last week where there was a team on the slate. I think it was the A's that their salary was so low. They were also facing a chalkier pitcher on the slate. Their salaries were so low that it was very difficult to build a five stack of A's without being under the default 4,800 min salary. So people were basically getting zero A's in their 1,500 lineup builds because you just couldn't stack them and spend enough salary elsewhere to even get a lineup above 48,000. They were just that cheap. So I would say check on min salary as well. The Braves, you know, they have some bigger bats in that lineup. So I think that's maybe a little less likely. I think I'm leaning a little bit more on the side that there was possibly some kind of rule or something set that was prohibiting it. If you're running into a situation like that, especially when Locke is bearing down on you, I probably would recommend kind of pulling off the layers of rules and restrictions that you've set on the builder to try to get things back where you want them to be. So Brad said, so the teams page doesn't necessarily show all the teams. I thought it would show all the teams no matter what, because then I could adjust exposures if I wanted said team. At the moment, it does not show all the teams. It shows all the teams that show up in your pool. Or that's actually true of everything, right? It's the same. It doesn't show every single stack combination you could make. It shows all the stack combinations that show up in your pool. Mostly just because we don't want to like, we don't want to show a team here. And if you were to, if a team is listed here, we want you to be able to actually get something out of making an adjustment to the exposure, right? Like the last thing we want to do is list Washington here when there's no Washington lineups in your entire pool of 500. So that when you go in here and put 20, you automatically get met with a message that you need to build more lineups or something like that, right? That's not a great experience. So the teams listed here are all of the teams that are showing up in your, lineups. And, you know, most of the time, I mean, this is 500, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. So there's two teams in our pool of 500 here that aren't stacked. I don't know which two they are. They're probably two like very low projected teams. Oakland, I know is Oakland's here. So probably two just very low projected teams just aren't showing up here. Most of the time you will get exposure, at least have a few lineups that stack every team in your pool. Here's, I guess, like if I were to give you the actual troubleshooting steps I would take, here's what I would do first. I wouldn't touch any of your rules. And I would just first start with increasing sim precision, like maybe even to 10, and building a pool of 1500 and just saying, build me the most diversified set of lineups possible. If you are building a set of lineups, if you're building a 1500 lineup pool with a very high sim precision and you are getting 0% exposure to a particular stack, I would feel pretty confident in saying it's almost certain that there is a rule prohibiting the builder from building that team somewhere, because it's just incredibly unlikely that in a 1500 slate sim, essentially, that you get zero exposure to one team. And I would relax your min salary. I would relax the minimum projection filter. I would probably just remove any stacking rules that might be set. Those stacking rules can sometimes have, you know, unintended consequences. Even from a salary standpoint, right? Like a five stack rule that you've set to include some teams may have prohibited other teams from getting stacked on the other side because of a salary restriction or something like that, right? There's unintended consequences that can come up here a lot. And just pull back some of those layers there. So I hope that helps at least a little bit there. I mean, another thing you can do too would be to go in and set minimum exposures to those batters and then see what happens, right? Like it would be if you set minimum exposures to the Braves bats and the build failed, that would be also a pretty clear indication that there was a setting mixed up somewhere. Metal Alloy said, okay, thanks. When I tried to do the three-man rule, it was grayed out. I'll do it again. Yeah, so there is, I know there's a restriction that it will stop you eventually here from creating more rules right here. So 8 total players. Just make sure your total stacks add up to 8 or less players, but otherwise you should be okay. Eric asks a very interesting question. Is it okay to set minimum salary to 0 for 150 GPP? I think so. I think it is. I would be careful. So especially this season in particular, I have felt more than ever more comfortable with playing very low salary lineups, especially for a large field 150 max type contest. Salaries have been very inefficient this year, I think. Case in point, the example I was giving a moment ago, right? If the A's, as just a random team, are so cheap that it is difficult to stack them. Are they still that cheap? Like, they're still pretty cheap. Yeah. So the A's are so cheap, right? They surely have some kind of equity as being the number one stack. Surely, right? They have to. If they're playing baseball on the slate, they have to have some probability of being the number one stack on the slate. Well, if there isn't a lineup that you can build that stacks them and uses, or if there aren't many lineups that stack them that use more than 48,000 salary, right? Then in some ways you have to at least open your mind to considering that lower salary builds if you have any interest in stacking that particular team. And salaries have just been so inefficient across the board that I think it has made more sense even more this season than ever to play some of these lower salary builds. Now, one thing to be careful on, so that's kind of a theoretical level. And I was actually doing a little bit of research on this morning, and I'll show you. I was using, so a good example of when I think some research of sharp lineups can be useful, right? So I went in here, I literally just did this analysis this morning because I was curious. And I looked at the 6-gamer from last night, and I was just looking at the flagship. And I was just looking at some of the top guys that, you know, I know are pretty sharp players and looking at their lineups. So I was using this RotoGrinders results DB, and I literally was just kind of basically checking. I want you guys to be able to see the bottom of the screen. So I'm going to remove this. And I'm going to put me over there. So I was literally just checking, you know, like, are there $46,000 lineups in these guys' pools, right? And are there $45,000 lineups? And I actually, from what I found, you know, a lot of these like sharp 150 max players in the flagship are playing lineups at these low salaries, 45, 44, 40, 46, et cetera. So I think it's interesting. And I've been experimenting with that a little bit this season. I think strategically it makes some sense. Now on the practical level within the scope of SaberSim, what this min salary ends up doing actually most commonly is it ends up as kind of a hedge against the ownership fade slider, right? What the ownership fade slider is going to do is it's going to push you in the direction of playing lower owned plays. And this min salary kind of hedges against that. It says, you know, instead of the easy route for ownership fade, the easiest route for the ownership fade slider to get to a very low owned lineup is to just not use a lot of salary, because a lot of times, you know, building a $44,000 or a $45,000 salary lineup is a easy way for the algorithm to find low owned bats, right? So the min salary basically says, no, you don't get the easy way out. Build a lineup that has a higher salary and also takes into account ownership, right? So what I'm basically trying to say is if you lower your minimum salary, I would start to be careful, or just be aware that you may start to see some very low owned lineups showing up. You kind of provide an easy route for the ownership fade slider to work. So I might consider, you know, if you bring this down to 4,000 or 0, right? I think the example is 0 here. I would be careful. I would consider maybe pulling the ownership fade slider back a little bit and finding ways maybe in your exposures or projection editing or things like that to account for ownership a little bit on your own. Because that is kind of where you can run into trouble. Eric says, so your answer begs this question. Do you feel there's a safe minimum below the default setting? No, honestly, I think the safe minimum is basically, the safe minimum ultimately ends up being established based on the simulations themselves. So if you, let's say you put this to 0, right? So I'm going to turn ownership fade off for now, just as an example, right? So let's run this build, right? So this is correlation still valued. We're going to take buckets of game simulations sized appropriately for the contest we're playing and for the slate, right? We're leaving the sim precision slider where it's at, right? So this is basically going to take the training wheels off of the min salary and say, regardless of salary, build me the best possible lineup that's correlated for this sized bucket simulation. And then we can look and what we'll see. I don't even know what we're going to see, but we can look and kind of study this and see, you know, what is the actual floor of what is appropriate on salary for that particular slate, right? Taking the minimum off. I would even add on to what Eric has said here, right? Like, there's a pretty compelling argument that if you're using simulations to build lineups, period, that you don't need the min salary at all, right? Because you're building lineups that are optimized for a set of sims. And if you're getting a 47.5 lineup or a 44.5 lineup in that, you know that that lineup's still optimal for an appropriately sized bucket of simulations for that contest. The min salary setting essentially exists on SaberSim to provide a backstop to things like the ownership fade slider and make sure that slider is making decisions that are appropriate within given salary bands. So anyway, looking at the top lineups here, 48.3, 48.9, 49.8, 50, 47.5. Someone's a little lower. 47.6. So a lot of the lineups are kind of still, you know, I would say there's kind of a soft floor of around 47.5, at least for some of the most of the top lineups in the pool, even though there wasn't an actual floor on the build. We can actually look and see of our pool of 500 lineups, what was the lowest salary lineup we got to? And it was 41.1 lineup in here. In my kind of initial research of the slate yesterday, I didn't see any of these like kind of top pros get down to 41. But I mean, Whistles had 41 yesterday. So I think there's an argument. I would say like my, here's where I'm kind of torn. I think this is a really interesting question. I've been thinking about this a lot recently. So I'm kind of torn where on one hand, right, the salaries for players is really just a projection system, right? DraftKings is basically saying DraftKings has some kind of model, some kind of projection model that they've built that they run, and it assigns salaries to every single player in the pool. That's all it is, right? It is essentially a projection model where a player gets an arbitrary number instead of their actual projection, right? Well, that doesn't really matter to you, provided that you have some other projection model that you think is better. And I would absolutely say that, you know, SaberSim's projection model and simulation model is probably better than DraftKings' salary model, right? So at that point, you know, if a lineup that has 42,000 salary used out of 50,000, right? If that lineup is theoretically optimal for a set of simulations, I would feel comfortable using it. Now, the other reason why I'm torn is because there are so many lineups that you can make on a slate. I mean, trillions, right? Like a 13 game slate, there are, especially if you're willing to play salary lineups that are this low, there are literally trillions of lineups where you could build a profitable lineup for that particular slate or a good lineup, right? And on the other hand, I there's a part of me that thinks, you know, given that there are that many lineups that you can play, why not use salary as kind of another data point and basically say, you know, let's just build lineups that are within 1,000 or 2,000 of the max salary. Because knowing that there are so many lineups in the pool, there are probably, I don't know, still billions of lineups built within those salary constraints that are good. Why not just use those? Why enter of our 150? Why enter a lineup that has a 41.1 salary? But the theoretical standpoint makes sense to me of why you might want to play some smaller lineups, some lower salary lineups. And I think like the data is pretty clear from what some of these like sharper players are doing as well. Right. I mean, these guys are getting down to 41, 42. So it kind of depends on who you look at. But there's some lower salary builds that are getting into these guys' portfolios. So, anyway, I know I've kind of gone back and forth here. HC said, so how much salary do you feel comfortable leaving at this point? I have been building lineups with my min salary at zero. And I'm kind of comfortable with the implications of that there. I would say, again, if you are going to do that, be very careful about the way that you are handling ownership in your process, right? Be careful, because you are going to introduce some more like some uncertainty there. So be careful with that. But I would also adjust this by saying I'm really speaking for large field 150 max GPPs here. When you're talking about building 20 lineups or one, like, or three, there you probably don't need to take on the amount of risk that you do by playing a lineup that's 5,000 leaves 5,000 salary on the table. But if you're playing 150 max contest and you're trying to beat out 25,000, 30,000 other lineups, I think it really gets interesting to start leaving some additional salary on the table. So if it makes sense, right? If it makes sense for that particular lineup to do that. I'm not talking about forcing it. And Eric said, theoretically, it seems like the Sims should still rank the lower price lineups appropriately, 150 GPP. And it does, right? So if we come back here and instead of sorting by lowest salary to highest salary, like let's go back and actually look at the highest Saber score lineups, right? You can kind of see, I think, you know, the higher salary lineups on average are going to be the ones that are showing up here in our top, right? Some of the lower salary lineups get weeded out with a lower Saber score. So I think that does still come into play. That does still happen. But yeah, and I don't know. I mean, you can really just look at these lineups. Like, there's nothing wrong with a lot of these lineups, especially around 45, 46, 47, right? Like 46, 47, 6. You've got Gausman and Montas with a 5-2, Brewers, Cubs, Mets one off. Like, this lineup looks great. I would play this lineup. So from that standpoint, like, what, I mean, this is leaving 2,400 salary on the table, right? That's quite a bit. I don't know how much of a believer I am that salary means very much in baseball. Especially with how good projections are now, right? Cause that is, again, I think maybe one of the more important points to take away here is that player salaries are really just their projections, right? So, they're probably not a very good model. They're not really intended to be a great model, right? DraftKings has an interest in making their game somewhat skillful, right? So they really just need to have something kind of close as their player salaries, something that kind of resembles something close. And then you let the market figure out what the actual true player projection prices are. Cause that's what the game is anyway. Right. Make it close enough. So yeah, I don't know. So it's interesting. It really is. I've been thinking about this a ton this year. Cause I think in particular, we've just had some slates where it's like, what are we doing with these salaries? I mean, even tonight, right? Like it's a decent example that, you know, I mean, there's, according to SaberSims projections, you can pay, $1,100 less and get three additional fantasy points by playing Urias instead of Giolito, right? So when we're talking about a $2,400 difference in salary between two lineups, right, or a lineup that sacrifices $2,400 salary, right? Well, $1,100 of that would have been covered purely by playing a player that is better projected anyway. So, yeah. Eric said, so salaries sound like a redundant type of projection. Yeah, I think they kind of like can be. Obviously, I mean, you can't play higher than the max salary. But in terms of that min salary floor, if you're using a good projection model, you shouldn't really need to worry too much about that, I don't think. But that is kind of where the ownership fade slider can be a little bit dangerous with this, is because at that point, you're not just using buckets of sims, or you're not just using a projection model on its own. You are adjusting projections based on ownership. And, you know, I mean, you could just experiment with this too. Turn your min salary to zero and really crank that ownership fade slider. You will probably see some extremely low projected lineups in there, because their ownership is so low for those players. So I would just proceed. That is the one spot that I would be careful with here, is if you are going to experiment with lower mid salaries, I would be careful with ownership fade. And I think this is still something that I would probably only think makes sense to do, period, at all, if you're playing large field 150 max tournaments, where you're playing so many lineups anyway that it might be worth exploring the idea of getting to some lower salary builds. There's so many lineups that are good that are within $1,000 of the max salary anyway on a 13 game slate, that for playing 20, 3, 10, 5, 1, I wouldn't even bother. So Patrick said, I'm tilting from NBA game 7. Optimal lineup at the captain spot was Daniel Tice and Omer Yurt 7. SaberSim did not account for those min 1K salary guys. Yeah, so this was a really interesting use case, right? That is not why that lineup did not win, because Tice and Yurt 7 broke the slate, right? They didn't even play. That lineup won because it was the only way, and I actually don't know if that lineup did end up winning. It was winning. I don't think it ended up winning. I think it was a Jason Tatum captain lineup, if I remember correctly. It was the actual optimal when it was all said and done. Actually, we can just look this up. But it was winning for a while, and I know JBC tweeted about it too. What day? That was on Sunday? Oh, do they not have Showdown on here? What's the big idea? Maybe we won't get to look. Anyway, I'm pretty confident that lineup didn't end up winning. Actually, can we use... Now I'm interested. So now I really want to see. I was going to say, maybe we can use Line Star. I don't know. Anyway, what I wanted to say, though, is that lineup only existed, right? Because it was a way to play... Butler, Tatum, Bam, Jaylen Brown, and Marcus Smart all together. It was the only way to build that lineup. It was actually a really clever construction. Yes, you are never going to get a player projected for 0 minutes in your captain spot in a NBA Showdown lineup with SaberSim. That's not going to happen because that player is projected for 0 points. For those that played that particular construction, it was a really creative way of building a lineup that played high upside players in the only way those players could be combined in that lineup together. I thought it was fascinating. I don't think it worked out though. I remember looking at the end of the slate, at least in like the mini max, a Jason Tatum lineup passed that lineup. Jason Tatum captain lineup passed that lineup, and everybody in that winning lineup ended up playing. But yeah, no, it's interesting. And I think there's probably still kind of a uncharted territory of Showdown lineup constructions that do really weird, unique things like that. Kind of, I don't know, get off of the beaten path of constructions. So I feel pretty confident that I know, like, there was a screenshot. The one JBC tweeted was McLovin in first place with that lineup in the main GPP. There is no way McLovin played that lineup from the standpoint of, I think your seven's actually going to get in the game and break the slate. There's no way in a game seven that's what the thesis of that lineup was. The thesis of that lineup was, this is the only way to build this lineup to play all five of these players together because of their salaries, is by stacking them with a player whose captain salary was 1800 or 1500 or whatever it was. It's creative. It's interesting. If you want to allow for more creative lineup constructions into your pool in SaberSim, I think you can give some of these guys a fantasy point projection, right? Like even a half of a fantasy point projection, they're going to show up in your pool. Let's jump to the NBA final slate, right? But you are taking on a ton of risk there as well, right? Like if you give a player that has a zero fantasy point projection, a one fantasy point projection, you are going to get them in your lineups, right? And you are taking a player that, you know, based on our simulations, we assume is going to play 0 minutes, and you will get exposure to that player. So there's risk associated with that as well. So it goes both ways. But yeah, I really wish I had this info. Let me see before we kind of, let me see if I can find it in my contests here. Real quickly. Cause it was just a couple days ago, right? Last 7 days. Oh, there we go. Okay. So this is, oh, okay. So I was wrong. So it was a smart captain lineup, ended up taking it out. So this is the mini max, which I assume is probably going to mimic pretty close to what happened in the flagship. So it was a smart captain lineup, I think. So then there was a BAM captain lineup somewhere down here. I bet there's, we could probably go find an example, because I saw it in the mini max a little bit as well, of that zero captain spot lineup that ended up being up there. But yeah, I would say if you want to include some of those, more diverse lineup constructions in your pool, or at least allow SaberSim the chance to build them, right? Add a small projection to some of these low projected players, and it will add some of those guys in there. You will get exposure to them. But yeah, that I was honestly praying for a player with a 0 point out total to in the captain spot to win the slate. Like, I just think that would be so cool. I think that'd be crazy. That would be such a dramatic shakeup to the landscape of Showdown DFS to have that happen. I feel like, I mean, that would fundamentally change the way people think about Showdown in DFS if a 0 point score in the captain spot was the nuts, purely because it enabled a lineup construction that was otherwise completely impossible. That would be fascinating, right? But anyway, Patrick, I wouldn't tell too much. SaberSim did not account for those min 1K salary guys because they did not have a minute projection, and they also did not play basketball that day. So the projections in that way were right. I think it's fair to say that you're tilting because a player with a 0 point projection did not show up in the captain spot of your lineups, and that was briefly close to being the nuts. But I think there's also a tremendous amount of risk associated with building that kind of lineup. And there are tools, there are plenty of ways in SaberSim to get to those constructions if you want them. Nobody came to me the day before that game, or I guess that was a Sunday game. Nobody came to me on Friday afternoon and said, "Hey, I'm not getting any Omer Yurt 7 captain lineups in my NBA pool." We didn't get any emails about that either, right? It was an extremely off-the-wall creative lineup construction that I don't think very many people were on. So anyway, enough on that point, right? Rambled enough there. Anyway, we've managed to get to about an hour here. It went quick. Started talking about min salary and weird 0 point projected captain lineup constructions for NBA Showdown, and it's an hour later all of a sudden. So we'll go ahead and leave it there before we leave for today. On tomorrow's stream, and I should have mentioned this at the start. Tomorrow's stream, I will be bringing Eric on, one of our data scientists here at SaberSim, to talk about his research into contest selection, bankroll management, the balance between upside ROI and reducing your risk and your variance in your contest selection. Eric has been working really hard for the past couple of weeks on doing a analytical approach to contest selection research here. And I'm going to bring him on, interview him, talk a little bit about what he has found here. So that will be at 2:00 Eastern tomorrow. So normal office hours time. So look forward to that. Come join me there. We will, towards the end of that stream, we'll take questions from you guys about that kind of stuff. We will stick mostly to relevant questions to the topic tomorrow. So on Thursday stream, I'll be back. We'll do the open Q&A thing, talk a little bit more just, you know, about whatever you want to talk about. But tomorrow, kind of contest selection, bankroll management type questions here. We'll go from there. So thanks everybody for tuning into today's stream. Looking forward to tomorrow. Be careful. Watch the weather in Coors tonight, please, because I really do think it's going to pour. Good luck tonight. So see y'all tomorrow.